So I would like to introduce the focus for today, but before I do that, there's something that I guess this song stimulated in me around the spirit in which we are doing whatever we do here together. This is, for me, maybe almost the most important element of what we are doing together with each other, with ourselves individually, and for each other. What I think of is the context or the perspective of this gathering and the names that we give to it, the labels. It's a program, 2 years, a retreat, workshops. We do exercises, we do processes. And all of this is very kind of not a reflection of the spirit, I think. It's certainly a part of the structure, and it's a part of how we understand in this culture these kinds of activities and gatherings. But for me, it doesn't touch the spirit of what we're doing, the essence of what I see we're doing. And if I can even try to put it into words about it, what I think we're doing, it's some of the words, I don't remember what they were in that song, touch into what I think of as the spirit of what we're doing together here. We are here for ourselves and for each other, and we're offering ourselves to each other. When we sit in a group, when we sit in a circle, when we sit in small groups or sit in pairs, the living statement is, I am here and I offer my life to you. I offer those parts of me that have been difficult, that are tender, those parts of me where I'm scared, where I hold. I offer this to you. So this is, for me, a very important thing to recognize. And that I offer to you, and the one who is receiving it, saying, I offer myself to you, too. I offer my presence. I'm here to receive you. I'm not here to fix you. I'm not here to make it better for you. But I'm here to listen and being present as much as I'm able to, even though I can't do it perfectly. I am here for the life in you, and I offer the life in me. And this activity is a human activity that I think at its very core is a sacred activity that we're doing. And I think it's important to name it because it's easy to get caught up in, this is an exercise we're doing, these are the steps to the exercise. And those are important because I think the mind needs these kinds of tools or directives to be able to access certain elements of our experience in ways that if we didn't have these tools, we would not be able to do it. So it's not that they're unimportant, but that they are only vehicles for the spirit. They're only ways to direct the spirit. And unless I'm inhabiting the spirit, unless you are inhabiting the spirit of this work, then I think it's much more difficult to allow that something, that space, wherein life can really emerge, wherein our hearts can emerge, wherein I can feel whatever the trust it is that I feel to go beyond what I thought I was able to go with myself and with you. It's that spirit of allowing, and it's the spirit where we start to grow a part of ourself that maybe we didn't know was there, or we start to grow a part of ourselves that we didn't know had this potential in us. And so, I'm just saying this because I hold it as very important as the intent, the spirit, the holder of the space of what we are here for. and how we are with ourselves and with each other. So that's the first point I want to make. And the second point I want to make is, what is to ask and to name, what is that element? What is that something that perhaps is the most important element in all of this work? The most important element in coming to our wholeness, and coming to our true nature, coming to the essence and spirit of life as somehow it is intended to be. What is that most important element? Now, for me right now, that most important element is that seed in us that is a property of our, of who we are. It's a property of our nature, property of the being, of the soul, of the self. And that property is attention. Attention, awareness. And so this is something that we are cultivating. We're growing. I had the seed of this many, many years ago when I started my own path, that I discovered that all of life was a discipline of the attention, was mastering attention.
Attention or intention?
Attention. Attending to. Awareness. I use attention and awareness synonymously. So all of life for me, if I can master attention, then I can master life. And so I'm saying it because I think naming it is important. I think it's important to have an experience, a self-recognition of what is the element that is actually, what is the nature of the power of life. And the seed of it, for me, is awareness and attention. And the seed of it is, to the extent that I can master it, is I am mastering my agency with regard to attention. I'm not sure how well that translates into German. Agency. That means I am attending. I am the source and the cause. I am the agent of my attention. Nothing else is the agent of my own attention. Nothing else sources, creates my attention. It's not technique, it's not following a method that is the source and the power of my transformation. Any technique, any method, no matter what discipline, boils down to attention, to how I attend to my inner experience, how I attend if it's disciplined with other disciplines, perhaps having to do with the movement of bodies, whether it's dance, yoga, qigong, contact improv, whatever it is, it all boils down to the attention that I address and how I enliven my life with my attention. The quotation behind is the Viktor Frankl quotation that I often share, having to do with how the points to the importance of recognizing and finding my agency or my power with regard to my attention. So it's between stimulus and response. We can see it, life is a relationship. And life offers us a continual stimuli. It's coming into us always and we're going out to it. But when we, between stimulus and response, the response is, what is my internal response in relationship to life? In between how it comes to me and how I respond, there is a space. This is the space of attention. In this space is our power to choose. That's agency. How I choose, how I respond, is how I act and direct my attention, perhaps through my thoughts, through my feelings, through my sensations, through my needs, and act. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. So there is the center of this space. This space is so essential to everything that I believe human beings do. It's the space out of which creativity emerges. It's that space out of which the human heart emerges with its sensitivity, with its feeling, with its aliveness. It's that space that allows me to see you in your humanity. Without that space, I can't see you. What I'm seeing instead is that instead of stimulus response, what's the other option? It's stimulus react, stimulus recoil. You say something, I feel hurt, angry, or scared. There's very little space there, or no space. And this is the source of our suffering, it's the source of all violence. And so much of this work is around the recognition of there is this life, there is a stimulus. NVC points out, one of the pointing out instructions is, notice, is observe, just the power of observation. And notice how we tend to mix in our interpretations and evaluations and judgments. This is basic NVC, but I'm talking about a principle that is so simple and fundamental. Observe, stimulus, space, response. There are three principles in the process I'm going to be offering today. And I'm talking about the first principle. And these principles build on one another. So the foundational principle is what I call space. When there is a spaciousness, and I'm able to be conscious of what I'm observing without mixing in my evaluation, and I can simply be present to you, then there is an inner clarity. Clarity. It's spaciousness and clarity are synonymous. They're the same. Without the inner spaciousness, what am I feeling instead of inner spaciousness? When you react, what's going on inside?
Confusion?
Irritation? Tension.
Well,
overwhelm?
Well,
tension?
Lack of control
means not knowing what to choose or how to choose, being powerless. All the various forms that can be described as a kind of inner density, inner confusion. Whenever I'm in reaction, there is no space. All there is this turmoil that's going on. Even if it's a minor bit of turmoil, it's still turmoil. And it's not clear. If I don't have clarity, I'm not able to be present. I can't be present to my own inner life, and I can't be present to you. So clarity is one of the foundational capacities that we develop in this work. Referencing the fundamentals of nonviolent communication, the ability to observe without mixing in my interpretations, evaluations, and judgments. It's a very incredibly powerful principle to live into it. Now, I believe that almost everybody I think in this room has been exposed to it, and I believe that everybody understands it intellectually. Those are first two steps. But I'm not sure that everybody lives it. Because unless I'm able to cultivate and live into this space, I'm not available to myself and I'm not available to you. What I do instead is I receive the stimulus. That might be something that I did that is my own stimulus, but it brings me to the internal recoil, reaction, contraction. And then out of that reaction, I create my own world. I create my own fiction. And the fiction from has the levels of thinking, cognition, emotion, and sensation. But the most of the fiction is the thinking part, is the story that I make up. I'm sitting in a group, and I look at the group, and I tell myself, I'm too scared, this group is too big. I can't speak in a group. I'm afraid I'll be judged. Now, I'm not judging it, I just wanted to observe it. This is the fiction. Because when I see a group, I don't see you. I'm collapsed into the density of my own fears that have their own source, and we'll get to that probably tomorrow. Not, but just to recognize this, to the extent that I'm judging, reacting, recoil, I do not see you. I do not see life. I'm blind to it. What I see, as though I'm living in a sphere, and the inside part of the sphere is a projected screen, I project my internal world onto the screen, and all I see are my projections of my fear. See, with my fear, all I see is people who will judge me. That's what I see. That's my fear. Now, the tragedy is that I believe it. That I believe it to be so. And there's so many of these beliefs that I project that I don't have my freedom. I don't have the capacity. I don't have the agency because I've never learned how to do it. There's no blame here. It's no judgment. But I have not yet learned how to liberate myself from the constant pattern of stimulus and response and judgment. So this work is about beginning and continuing to generate this capacity. When I can begin to master my own responsiveness, then I become the master of my own life. That's what I call self-responsibility. That's what I call agency. This is where my power lives. The most powerful thing I can do is to master my attention. But unless I know how to, I'm lost, because I don't have the directives, the tools, the pointers, the map. And I'm just talking about the first level here, clarity and space. I'm not yet talking about the second and third levels, dimensions that grow from this. It is, for me, an ongoing practice to attend to being present to life, being present to what I'm observing, and to allow it into me as it is, not as I want it to be. To not resist it. Any judgment is a resistance. I'm resisting life. Can I let it in? Because if I do let it in, what does that mean? It means I'm vulnerable. It means I've learned how to relax and relinquish my defendedness and how I protect myself constantly.
I kind of have a question that has to do with trusting your instinct and intuition, but I'm not quite sure how to formulate it. But it seems like the you know, since your instinct comes from kind of a cellular wisdom almost, or like what if you're in a room full of people that, and there's everyone's lying to you, yeah, and you're observing that, but you don't really quite know that they're really lying or misleading you, or they have an agenda to harm you, but your instinct, something inside tells you that, like what's going on there?
Have you had that experience?
Sure, yes, okay. I have.
Yeah.
And well, I trusted my instinct and I was right.
Yeah.
But I became like, everybody thought I was crazy, but I actually turned out to be Jesus.
So what's the question?
So the question is, there seems to be an inconsistency between trusting your instinct in those situations, not life and death, but in situations like that, and what you're talking about.
I don't see any inconsistency at all.
Okay.
So, because the organ of perception through which you call intuition is a much more subtle organ. It's not the obvious. People are saying words, that's the obvious. But what you're sensing is much more subtle. And so what you're receiving, the observing mechanism in you, is that part that you call intuition or gut. You are feeling something, you're sensing something. You may not be able to cognitively name it or recognize it. So you trust in that, you're trusting in something that is real and authentic for you. Are you seeing
how yeah.
there's no inconsistency?
Right.
It's just a different level of observation.
Right. Okay.
And you trust it.
So I just want to clarify, so does that mean that intuition in its purest form is not mixed up with storytelling?
No, oh, absolutely
okay.
not.
Cool.
Intuition is the part of our sensitivity that we have not been able to cognitively recognize yet. It's easy to cognitively recognize a visual observation, all the five senses, but we function much more on the level, on the other levels that are more subtle than we do on the more obvious levels. We sense it, we pick up on energies, feeling. It's hard to name those, but we feel it. Now, the problem is that I can mix in my stories with that and then live in a world of confusion where part of it is an accurate sensing of what's going on and the other part is the story that I lay on top of it. Yeah. Like I'm in a room full of right-wing conservative people who think that the only way out of life is to dominate other people. And I can label those people and say, that's why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. I mean, there's many examples. That may not be the best one. So our relationship to life, our relationship to what we observe, is a very critical part of how we take in. And when I'm recognizing that I don't have the space, then this is where I bring my attention. The ability to recognize that what I'm observing, what I'm taking in, that I'm adding something to it. I want to be able to name what I'm adding to it. Name, this is something where I'm feeling tense, this is something where I'm scared, and this is something where I find I'm telling myself this story. I'm telling myself the story that this is unsafe, I'm telling myself the story that you are unsafe. That's a story. That's not the observation. I'm telling myself the story that you're rude. I'm telling myself the story that this situation is hopeless. The ability to recognize that I'm thinking and evaluating and telling myself a story is the key to my agency and to my freedom. Without that, I'm a victim of my own thoughts. Not only that, I'm a victim of it to the extent that I blame the environment for how I'm feeling. Blame is a function of not having my own internal freedom and space. So clarity. Then, if I'm able to develop some degree of clarity in relationship to what I'm observing, someone says or does something, there is an event, I miss my connection at the airport, you know, something happens, someone does something that is uncomfortable for me or doesn't meet a need of mine. Can I just allow the vulnerability of that in? Then, only then, am I open to feeling what's actually there in me. Only then, this is a vulnerable space. Then I'm open and vulnerable to actually feeling the natural response of how life enters into me. Only then am I in the space where it's possible to experience compassion.
Excuse me, Robert, can you say again, please, the link you do between the capacity to distinguish the observation to the story? And
When I'm able to do that, yeah. distinguish the ups, to the extent that I can do that, I have inner clarity, inner space. There is an openness. And then when I have this inner space, then I can truly meet what's coming to me in an open and vulnerable way. But vulnerability means I'm open to feeling the pain of that unmet need, the pain of what didn't occur that I so value. And that's what a part of me often fights against, because I don't want to feel the pain. I want to feel angry and blame you instead, because that's all I know. So then I have this space. Then there's the opportunity to feel, to actually feel. And to actually get in touch with my heart, which is to say, what I truly value in this situation, that's what I feel something about. Someone says something to me that doesn't match what my intention is, so I can judge them and say, they'll never get me, they don't understand me, they're not at my level, or whatever my story is. All they care about is getting whatever their agenda met. So when I clear that story by recognizing that it's my thought, then I have some clarity, and then I can take in what they say or do. Then I can feel something more tender because I'm able to feel something. Then I can maybe start to feel the shaken. I can feel tender, sensitive, the feeling state. I can actually begin to then feel my heart, my feelings. And generally speaking, maybe it's just, I don't know, it's hurt, it's pain, disappointment. And the feeling is an indication that what I truly value is not being met here. But the compassion comes in, the self-compassion, when I'm able to let myself feel, I give the space, inner space, or I receive it from another, the space and the presence to allow whatever I'm feeling to be here, to be felt, to be expressed. Then I'm in this space of compassion. So clarity and then compassion. It can't go the other way around. There has to be some space in order to feel compassion, in order to experience my authenticity. Whatever that pain is. And then I let myself, even if it's just a little, I don't always feel the grief or the mourning, but often it's there, even if it's just a little. Then I feel the grief of my value not being fulfilled, of my need not being met. My heart is open. I allow myself to feel it. I dwell on this. Before I jump into solution, before I jump into something else, I can dwell in the tenderness of my feeling state. And I feel the sadness. This is the principle of mourning and natural grief. Only because something is precious. There's something, there's always something precious and beautiful. Always being seen, being understood, being regarded with kindness and respectful consideration. Those are very precious qualities. That's the beauty that my sadness takes me to. Then it helps me to move into the third dimension, which I call empowerment. I mourn, I grieve, I live in the tenderness of the hurt and the pain. It connects me to what is precious. And then I can, not denying the pain, not overriding the grief, I remember what is precious, and then I dwell in what is precious. I dwell in the beauty of perhaps trust or understanding that this quality is actually the heart of who I am. This is what my life stands for. This is what I stand for. this is what I want to carry forth in my life, in my relationships. That's when I'm in my true power, the power of life. And this is, this practice culminates if I practice it over and over again, developing clarity, then compassion, and then the power of my being, empowerment. So those are I've noticed the developmental stages of this process of transformation, of healing. And there is a technical map for it that we're going to practice today. Many of you are familiar with it. But I think it's important to describe the principles underlying the map so we can follow the principles of it. This process I developed probably 14 years ago. I remember the exact setting because it was so such an event. It's transforming the pain of unmet needs into the beauty of needs. There's these steps to develop clarity. And it's on one of the, I'm not sure where it is in the handout, you can take a look at it. As with many of the practices, we begin with an experience that perhaps we have not fully digested, that we have not fully experienced, that kind of stays with us, the residue of pain or unfulfilled experiences, these kind of stay with us. So we use these experiences as an opportunity to enter into and develop these capacities. It's more about developing the capacities rather than resolving this particular issue, even though that happens as well. So we start out with an experience that we have that we want to explore and take a look at. We identify what happened, what was the stimulus, and write that down. We write it down so we can have some clarity. And then we might be able to spend some time looking at the observation and removing all of those parts of the observation that are actually evaluations. So, and then we have a clear observation, and then we take a look at reflecting on my experience. What kind of thoughts and judgments are coming up into me right now? I need to be able to recognize my judgments before I can have some sort of, it's the space, before I can have some sort of choice with regard to my own judgments. So I identify my judgments, my evaluations, whether it's aimed at the other person or myself. So that's the first step in developing clarity. And then I let myself really feel the feelings that are associated with these judgments. Rather than just naming them, just let myself feel the experience of being in this judgment. And then I differentiate. This is going through this time, this part of it can be very challenging for people. So I notice the observation. This person said this to me after I said something to them. And then I notice my judgments. They never listen to me. I'm not worth listening to. They're rude. They'll never understand me. You know, these are all my stories. And then I go through a process of owning my stories as stories rather than believing in them. And this is challenging because I might say, I'm telling myself this story, and notice the difference between that and the observation. Simply name it. This is what I'm judging about this, and this is what the observation is. Until I'm able to see more clearly that I'm in this evaluative mode. And whenever I've experienced the actual direct experience of differentiating between my story and the observation, I always feel it in the body. I always feel some kind of relaxation or relief. Sometimes it's described as, oh, now I have a distance. There's a distance. Now I can really see what I've been thinking and evaluating and judging. So then I have some sense of freedom. And then I would go to, now can I put my attention on the stimulus on what happened again? So that I now I have a more clear open space. And then what am I feeling in regard to this? What am I needing? What is truly precious to me? So that I can receive it in an undefended way, in a vulnerable way. Then I can not only notice and identify, but let myself feel whatever feelings I feel. And to discover the link to what I'm valuing and needing, but experientially, so that I can actually experience it. So the space that I'm in is the space that allows a form of self-compassion, authentic feeling and needing. I'm just actually simplifying the whole process, just to give you an idea of it. And then I stay in the grief, stay in the mourning, and let and allow myself to feel the connection to the value, the wholeness, the beauty of what it is that I care for that is residing in my heart as a value, but it was absent in the experience. And if I can stay connected to that, dwell in the beauty and the energy of that, then that moves me forward. So that's the simple. Every person's experience is different because we run into different challenges at different stages of this process. Did you all get an opportunity to see the page in that? Can somebody tell me what page it's on?
14.
There's a diagram.
14.
14? Yeah. The diagram is on page 14. Page 15 is a more descriptive, a description of the stages of the process. And then page 16 and 17 are kind of a worksheet that you would use to do the process if you are doing it, working it with yourself, or if you are supporting someone else, you can sort of help guide them in the different stages of this process. Yeah. Does anybody have any questions about this? We will be practicing it.
Judgments with the evaluations,
yeah.
And that is what I then explore.
Yes.
So I take my attention away from the stimulus outside.
Yes.
I go for the stimulus that I keep creating inside of me through my judgments and evaluations, and that's what I stay with, and that's what I explore.
That's what we look at, the three stages of exploration. Number one is naming it. Number two is letting myself feel the energy of what it feels like to be in that judgment. And number three, to differentiate. This is my judgment, this is the observation. Now, there's an important something to identify here, because almost everybody can intellectually say, this is my story. So you can say, well, yeah, I'm identifying this. But intellectually identifying it and differentiating it are two completely different things. Because I can say, yes, I'm telling myself the story that he's an asshole. I'm telling myself that story. He's an asshole. Yeah, it's a story.
Yeah.
But in my body and in my being, I still believe it. I still see he's a fucking asshole. No question. Everybody knows, right? And if you don't know, you're an asshole. Believing in my judgments sometimes can have a very powerful grip on us, and this is one of the biggest challenges with this step of differentiating. It's not enough to just say, yes, I know this is a judgment. I hear that all the time. I've heard it for years in the NVC circles. Yeah, this is a judgment. And I'd say, well, so what? Does that help you to name it as a judgment? Because you're still in the judgment, you know? So it's going to be a... And this goes... The extent to which I'm attached to my judgments has very deep roots, and we're going to probably address that more tomorrow, because my experience is that every judgment, no matter how small, is sourced from what I call a repository of pain in my life, from my life history. Every judgment. There isn't one, I believe, that doesn't come from my life experience. And that repository, meaning that store place of all my judgments, is that place in my being where my core beliefs reside, where my perspectives of how I've learned all the strategies to protect myself, to defend against life, and to survive. So these are very powerful energies that keep my core beliefs intact. And so this process doesn't necessarily address that element of it, but at least if we run into a judgment that doesn't seem to, I can't seem to free myself from it because it's just energetically it's held in place so much that I cannot cognitively differentiate from it. So if that's the case, it's important just to name it. And then I might focus on a slightly different process within this process if that has so much energy that I can't move forward. So then that other process is around bringing that part of me, and it's a part of me, developing a compassionate embrace and relationship to that part of me, because it's always a hurt and wounded, scared part that's holding on to my belief. So I just wanted to at least identify that right now in case anybody runs into that. So that was a pretty long answer to your question, Marion. So did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just want to come back to the first words that I said. So just to remember that, again, I'm describing a kind of map to an inner territory. But the spirit of this is something that I want to remember. That this map, this process, has in no way the intention or the communication that this is something that everybody should be able to do. There's no should in here. It's an invitation to try this out, to do the very best we can. Because what we are accessing is our own internal life. Our own internal life. The parts of us that we carry with us. Perhaps those parts. I mean, there's certainly other parts that have served us, that allow us to live in life fully, creatively, with love. But there's these other parts that haven't. That haven't received enough love and compassion, that still live in the wounded parts of us. So I want to remember that whenever we are sharing this with one another, whenever we're exploring this, that this is what we're exploring. This is what we're bringing forward. Are there any other questions? There's only so many questions that we could answer on this level, because the more fundamental answers come from the experience of doing this process. I want to show you what the process looks like. So I would want to demonstrate the process in front of the group. with someone who's willing to bring a life experience that you have, and I would support you through the process so other people can observe the process. So you're volunteering, Nicholas?
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask you first what, just so I have clarity about the process and if it'll be fitting for the demonstration, can you just share with me what the observation of the stimulus is that you're working with?
The stimulus was that someone said to me, "You're pressing me out."
You're what?
You're pressing me out.
Squeezing me out. Okay. And of course that created a reaction in you, pain, judgments, etc. Okay. So I think it's a very good example. So great.